This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Carm Capriotto here, the pioneer of Automotive Aftermarket Podcast. You know, our format is very simple here. We educate through the voices of industry professionals. You learn and start implementing in your business, and together we advance the aftermarket to new heights. Hey, how do we handle a toxic employee? How long have we noticed their behavior and never addressed it? Is it hard for owners to let someone go that they hired and thought would be a great fit for their team? Dr. Dave Wyman, psychologist and owner of Wyman Consulting, explains the behavioral background to a toxic employee. Hey, every business owner needs to listen to this episode. Hey, thanks to our partner NAPA for providing you this episode. You know, together we can fix the technician shortage by investing now in an apprentice. Let NAPA help you. Start now, grow your own, build your bench. Our future technicians can come from our concentrated efforts together. Contact your NAPA representative to learn more or log into member.napaautocare.com to get started. A warm welcome to Dr. David Wyman, psychologist from Wyman Consulting. And now, the third show we're going to do together. Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Dave is the president of Wyman Consulting, a leadership consulting firm in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. He is also an adjunct assistant professor at Widener University Institute for Graduate Clinical Psychology. And are you still a certified coach with Johnson & Johnson?
I am.
Did they ask you anything about the vaccination at all?
They did not.
Just checking.
I imagine they have a preference for the one they made.
I bet you they do. Dr. Dave's been quoted in Business Week, the Los Angeles Times, Men Health Entrepreneur, and many other publications. Good to have you here. Dr. Dave and I did a great episode, Managing Holiday Stress Amid the Pandemic. It was episode 593. And by the way, I pushed it to the top of the stack in middle of December so that if people were scanning through the most recent releases, they would have seen that because I thought it was such a perfect episode for the holiday. Thank you for that. We also did a show called Stress Busters to deal with the emotional roller coaster ride that sometimes we are all on, and that was kind of in the middle of COVID and everything. You remember that?
I do.
Episode 579. And so we were chatting, and I can't remember how this all came about, but I think you all know the name of the title of this, as we've been promoting the heck out of it. And how to deal with high performers who are also jerks. And I know you've written some articles on it. You've actually sent me some great stuff. I'm fascinated with this topic. We are struggling with the technician shortage. We are struggling just to find great people to come to work in our industry, Dave. You know, we're a highly skilled trade anymore. And I know the pulse and the beat of our industry is all about building a great culture in our companies. We're not going to survive without it. Any business, it doesn't matter, but I think the automotive aftermarket, the service, independent service business, is really catapulting itself to that level. And sometimes that means ferreting out some bad apples. We want a great culture, and we value promoting high performance, but every once in a while, we find, and I love it, we find a jerk. Believe you me, in all my years in business, you know, just researching the articles that you gave me, I just start reminiscing of all these people that I remember.
That happens for a lot of people. And in preparing for the conversation, I'm remembering times that I was in a shop, and sometimes there's just body language that gives away who the jerk is. So the service writer came out after talking to someone in the shop, and all he did was go like this, like, you know, and you could tell he had just left a frustrating conversation with a prima donna back there. They're everywhere.
Yeah. Dr. Dave rolled his eyes. And so you're
sorry. I forgot. Yeah. I was told I have a face for radio. I forgot that some people are going to be hearing this.
But I love what you're saying. Body language. I mean, even shrugging the shoulders and walking away and rolling the eyes. There is so much to take away from what we sometimes project ourselves.
and the frustration that the person had, that wasn't in the moment. You could tell this is a thing. Like this is a pattern that they've been dealing with that person.
And if we want to keep the high performer who is not playing nice, who's not living inside of our values, who's really toxic, maybe that's a word we could use. I remember having a gang fire. You know, my top leaders came in the office, they closed the door, and they said, it's him or us.
That can happen.
I tell that story often in the last 1,000 episodes because it is emblazoned right here inside my forehead. I'll never, ever forget that moment. And I knew I was in the wrong, Dr. Dave. I knew I should have acted.
And at the moment where people feel comfortable enough sharing that, we have to assume they already felt that way for a while. They already were frustrated. They were already recognizing this as a problem. It just sometimes takes a while for them to feel comfortable bringing it up.
Dr. Dave, does the toxic person know how much they contribute to the negativity of the environment and the culture?
That's a great question. I wonder, even if they know, do they care? Because it's all about them. I'm always observant when I'm in any workplace about looking around for, see what's going on. And somebody had left for the day because they did not like to take cars out for a road test. That was just something I don't know why, doesn't make any sense. But so they left, they got angry and they left. They just walked out. They went home. I guess intellectually, to answer your question, at some level, they must have known if they leave, other people have to pick up the work that was there, or a customer's not going to get their car back, or things are going to get delayed. I just don't think they cared. Like in that moment, they got emotionally hijacked and they just react. That's what they were responding to. It was all about them. And I think some of that selfishness might answer the question. If they do know, I don't think that they care about the impact, because they see themselves as special in some way.
We are trying to get so much smarter in hiring people. Some shop owners, they're telling me it's taking weeks to really, get to the bottom of the stack, and meeting with the spouse, significant other, having them come in and work for a day, meeting the team, interviewed by the team to really find out if they're, a cultural fit. Do you know of any litmus paper test for toxicity, or do you find it by being a very thorough interviewer and you don't jump at the first candidate?
Everything that the person does is a sample of their behavior. So if you're noticing things in the beginning of the process that are behavioral, they're not responding to emails right away, they're not following instructions in your assessment process, they're sarcastic in, like if there's a questionnaire, they're sarcastic in their response to that. So pay attention to those things. There are two questions that I like a lot that help generally get at how the person cooperates with other people. Now, people are tempted in interviews to ask a question like, give me an example. These are behavioral questions. So give me an example of when you cooperated with other people. Well, you've seeded the question with the answer. They know what you're asking about. So they'll give you an example of them cooperating with other people. I prefer to ask these two questions, which I think are general enough that it allows the applicant to go wherever they want to go, but gives you a lot of information. So the first question is, tell me about a recent success that you were directly involved in, and share with me what happened and why you think it was so successful. The second question is the opposite of the first one. Can you tell me about a recent professional disappointment, something that didn't go well, and share with me why it didn't go well? What happened and why, in your view, it didn't go well? And so in the answers to these, and I can tell you're already ahead of me on this one, but you'll see things like, if they only give themselves credit for the success, I did this, I did that, it was because of me that we salvaged this bad situation. That's interesting information. On the opposite side, if it's a failure and they blame everybody else, oh, this person didn't do this job and this thing didn't show up on time and it's because of somebody else, that's also highly relevant. What I look for in the second answer is that they assessed what the problem was. They had alternate, so they had options that they had come up with, and that they engaged other people in the solution, because that's somebody who does alternative solutions thinking, which is what we want, and that they know how to get resources. And so part of it is how they describe the problem, but also what they did about it.
I love it. You were right. I was way ahead of you. As my thoughts were churning, I see value in both questions, because we really do want to hear about, you know, leadership, what was successful. But if they're in the blame game on the disappointment, you've got an ego issue to probably handle, because they really can only see it one way. So we recently did an episode, Recovering from a Wrong Service Advisor Hire. It was at Town Hall Academy 256. And that was eye-opening. And this, if you will, I believe is kind of a bookend, because the guys are telling, they're saying confession. I goofed up, I screwed up, I didn't do this right. And we let that toxicity hang in there too long. And what happened in this is a great episode. They said it was like, you know, heaven opened up after we let that person go.
Well, think about all the energy that gets bound up dealing with someone who's a problem, and all the conversations that go on, and all the wasted time. And when you unblock that, the whole system gets more efficient and the whole system gets more effective. But I think that there's a lot of intangible cost to having someone who's a behavioral problem in an organization. The performance is, one can counterbalance the other. So some people would say, well, I would accept lower performance for higher cooperation, higher behavioral skills, because that person's an asset. And we can always bring up the performance piece. It's harder to do it the other way around. So because most people, and you had gotten at this in one of your earlier questions, most people who have that personality of the jerk, and people can fill in their own definitions of that, that's not something that typically changes. It's often something people try to coach or cajole or influence in some way, but that's actually much harder to change than a performance piece.
You get up every day, you go in, you know you got this problem, and you don't do anything about it. And you're really hurting not only you, your organization, your customers, but your entire team, and they start leaving.
Yeah, they start peeling off, because they also, it's not just the impact of that person on them, but they start to think, well, if this is tolerated here, they'll tolerate anything. Like, why am I hanging around? If this kind of person is, if people are clapping for this guy, what am I doing here? So they start to wonder about their own judgment in staying in an organization that allows someone like that, this bad behavior, the company jerk, to stick around.
In one of the articles that you wrote, you mentioned competent jerks, a terrible teammate who hoards resources and breaks the rules. What a bad example.
Exactly. Somebody smarter than I said, you know, in any organization, on any team, you have 20% of the folks at the top who they would come in and do their job. The boss wasn't there. They'd follow all the rules. They're self-motivated. They do the right things. There's 20% at the bottom who just, you know, they're unhappy wherever they are. If they moved from your team to somebody else's team, they would have the same bad attitude. They complain all the time. They don't do their job. You know, they're the problem children in an organization. And he said, then there's sort of 60% in the middle, and they can be drawn up or down. It really depends on how they're influenced. So to your point, there are people who, it's not just the people who are turned off by being on a team that supports this, the jerk personality, but they could also be influencing folks at the lower end of that 60% who think, hey, nothing happened to him when he showed up late 5 days in a row, so maybe it doesn't matter if I do. And so it can draw people, I believe it can draw people in one direction or another who are susceptible to that kind of behavior anyway.
Carm here. Coming up, how do you know if that toxic employee is savable? Keep listening and find out. Hi, Carm here, and I want to talk to you about the NAPA Auto Care Center program for health insurance. We've all heard the reports about the rising cost of health insurance, but you'll be happy to know I'm here with really good news. The Napa Insurance Center is now offering the Napa National Health Program, and it's saving Napa Auto Care Centers and their employees money, lots of money. In fact, in the first 90 days following the launch of the program, Napa stores and auto care centers and their employees saved over $2.7 million. That's all thanks to the Napa Insurance Center's partnership with United Healthcare. It gives auto care centers access to the national large group rates on medical insurance with premiums discounted up to 30%. Now, these rates are based on the collective purchasing potential of 22,500 Napa locations, including both Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care Centers. And listen to this. The news just keeps getting better. You can choose from four excellent United Healthcare medical plans with varying levels of coverage and deductibles to meet a range of needs. All plans are PPOs, preferred provider organizations, with comprehensive coverage. Because of the Napa Insurance Center's partnership with Aflac, you can have access to supplemental insurance benefits, including disability, accident, hospital, and more, all at a Napa-only discount, up to 35%. The Napa Benefits Center can help you with other group benefits, too, including group life insurance, retirement, HSAs, and more. Napa's National Health Benefit Program is just one of the many reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. Talk to your servicing Napa store. For more detailed information about the Napa National Health Program, visit the Napa Benefits Center at www.napabenefitscenter.com or call the Napa Benefits Center at 844-627-2123. When you were talking about the top 20%, I wrote this word down, soldier. And I really want you to draw the chart from the Simon Sinek article that you sent me about the SEAL Team 6. Because before we get too much further in the episode, I really want people to imagine in their minds what the trust and responsibilities is all about.
He was trying to figure out on SEAL Team 6, which is the elite of the Navy SEAL teams. SEALs are already elite. This is the elite of the elite. He was trying to figure out, what do they value there in a team member? What's important? And so there was performance along one axis, and there was trust along the other axis. And what he learned from them is that trust was more important than performance. Because of the nature of what they do, it was far more important to have someone on the team that you can trust, you can rely on, someone who there's a, and I think one definition of trust, as I recall, is a firm reliance on the other person. That was actually more important than performance. If you don't trust someone, the performance doesn't matter because you're always worried in the background that they're not going to do what they say they're going to do. And it was sort of interesting performance that that's the stuff that's on the job. The trust is behavior that you can see outside the job also. And I think it's interesting. I don't know if he talks about this in other versions of his report out of what he learned. But it's interesting that when we hear about something somebody does in their personal lives, how they conduct themselves there, it does change our impression of them. If we see them at work, that's one example. But if we learn on the outside that they're doing volunteer work, for example, and they're putting themselves out, and they, you know, they helped a neighbor out with a problem. They saw the neighbor struggling with some trash cans, and they went over and helped them. That those all build trust because we start to understand what that person values. And on the opposite side, if we know that they don't have these sort of trustworthy characteristics, on the personal side, that impacts how we see them at work as well. I think it all goes back to values. But that was the basic outcome of his delving into the SEALs program, that if there's somebody who is an a-hole, they're out in the minds of the people on that team. And it's totally understandable. I mean, they might train for months and months and months to take a specific, to do a specific action to, where they do start to depend on one another in a very significant way. They depend on each other already. But in one example that I have that's not an example from the SEALs, a military team had been preparing for quite a while to do a specific action or project. One person got sick. They did not replace that person They didn't do what they had planned to do because they had established such a level of, in team development, esprit de corps, where it's operating as one organism, it's one entity, that they aborted that mission because they wouldn't be able to do it with someone who was just inserted in there.
And I want to take that to another level to our listener who may be saying, yeah, I got to do something. Build your own chart, build your own axis, XY, put trust and performance on that when you're seriously looking at that individual and find out, do we trust that person? Where's their performance? And if the trust is low because we can't count on that person, they're off the charts, they're like a rocket that's not going straight, you know, they're all over the place. That's a trust issue. And I think you need to build that chart and do that assessment. If you feel that you have a toxic individual, can you describe, Dr. Dave, that jerks or toxic people are narcissists? I mean, is it all about them usually?
In my experience, it is. And they have their own excuses for their behavior. So team of folks are out on a golf course. There's the employee for the company, and there are some clients that they're supposed to be entertaining. And the employee who's in sales, top sales guy, big personality, super competitive, and he starts to get upset because he's not golfing as well as he should. By the way, the goal of this is not to win. The goal of it is to show the clients a good time. That doesn't matter. So the narcissism comes in. He's got to show that he's the best because he's always competitive. He's a competitive guy. So he starts getting more and more worked up. How do I know this? Because people are observing him who are with a different group. But they can see this and they know already from his personality something's about to go horribly wrong because he's showing the physical manifestations of somebody who's about to go off. He misses a shot and he gets so angry that he throws his golf club up and it gets stuck in a tree. And now it's all about him. It stopped being about serving another person, and it's all about him. So later, when his manager is talking with him about it, he doesn't have the ability to get out of his own frame of reference. And he just says, hey, I was pissed. You know, what's the problem? You hired me because I'm a competitive guy. I was just being myself. But what he really was saying is I was just being selfish and it didn't matter. So he wasn't able to take somebody else's point of view and see how bizarre this was. I mean, people who were elsewhere on the course, but members of the same company team were embarrassed that this is how somebody from their company is acting. But to your point, the narcissist in him was like, it's what I do, man. Like, this is me. I'm a competitive guy. I was upset. I threw my golf club. What do you want from me?
Hey, you asked me to do it. I did it. Hey.
Right. You know, there are so many parables that basically have the essence of if you invite a lion to, you know, the party and the lion behaves like a lion, you can't be upset about that. Or the snake bites you and, you know, there's so many stories around this, but you shouldn't expect somebody to behave differently than who they are inside. And so a lot of times, you know, as employers are looking for the person who's competitive on the one side, but they're ignoring the behavioral part, this aspect. By the way, in that particular example that I gave, the boss felt like this person had leadership potential and at a meeting with other managers said, hey, I want to promote this guy. There were all thumbs down on that vote. And basically they said, look, it's awesome that he's performing well, but he's toxic for this company. Like, everybody had heard the story about throwing the golf club up in the air on the golf course, and the anger, and it's nobody wants that.
Is there a level of jerkiness, toxicity, that you can fix this individual, bring him back into a higher level of trust and team?
I guess it's like the old joke, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is one, but the light bulb has to want to change. And so there's a coaching model from this performance coach, John Whitmore, and his book, Coaching for Performance. And it's sort of interesting because you are putting out there the opportunity for the coachee to do two things, become more aware, which is both self-awareness and situational awareness, and then to take responsibility for any changes that will help them. So I imagine that if the person, if you're giving feedback to somebody, like the guy throws a golf club up into the tree and you get the narcissistic response, then you have your answer. Because coachability is a thing. And what is coachability? It's the person's ability to take in feedback and then change. It's not rocket science. And so if you start to give somebody feedback and they say, well, and they give excuses, this is a bad day, you know, give me a break. Like, they don't see the impact of the behavior. They're less likely to want to change it because they don't think they're the problem. And so I think that you can start with feedback and see how to, what do they do with that feedback. If we share something about this event on the golf course, just to use that as an example, and they are defensive and they say it wasn't them, and or that it was them, but who cares? Like, what's your problem? Why are you making a big deal about this? You'll get the sense right away. All the folks listening to this all manage people. They all have instincts and intuition about people. If you get the sense this person is not listening to you, then it's really not likely that they're going to change because they don't even accept the reality that you have of their behavior.
I'm so moved by this because I think we can actually change some toxicity that exists in a lot of small businesses in our industry. A lot of shop owners will sit down with their people often, and maybe there's not a formal review process. I don't know what you believe in that. Maybe there's some 360s and we're constantly listening and talking and evaluating each other and team discussions. As I think you said in the beginning, a person like that's going to stick way out. It's like, why do we keep that person around? If you sit with a client, Dave, you know, in a leadership session who's dealing with this, do you ask the question, why is he or she still there?
I do. One of my first questions is, how long has this been going on? Because that gives you a clue as to whether or not there's some tolerance for this in the organization or not. Or have you had anybody like this in the past and what did you do? Because you can learn a lot from that too.
Can you change people? Next time you see them or they call you, you have a one-on-one, it says, well, thank you. I mean, it was a breath of fresh air. We finally did this thing. Thanks for waking me up.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's only after that pain is gone that they realize how much pain that person was causing the organization. They get used to it. And, you know, in the Blues Brothers movie, there's a great scene where Jake is let out of prison and he goes to Elwood's tenement flat apartment in Chicago and he's super tired. So he lies down on the bed and the apartment is right outside the Chicago elevated train. And as soon as Jake is just getting comfortable, train goes ripping by, shakes the apartment, light bulb starts swinging back and forth, plaster's falling off the wall. And Jake looks up at Elwood and he says, how often does that train go by? No one says, so often you won't even notice it. So we can kind of get accustomed to a certain amount of pain. It's only when it's gone that we go, that sucked.
You know? That's a great, great analogy. I love that. And it's hard for a lot of people to do a termination.
It's paradoxical because we picked the person. We hired them. And so we're all in, right? I mean, sometimes we have reservations about a person, but there's some cognitive dissonance there. Cognitive dissonance is when our behavior doesn't fit something else, like our values. And so how do we resolve the dissonance? Well, one way is that you change the situation. You say, you know what? I hired this person because in my judgment, they were right. Now they're wrong. Well, the dissonance is, but I picked them and they're wrong. So what do I do now? Well, I have to change something. Either I change my own values, I'm okay with this jerk, or I restore things to a place that's more in tune with my values. And that gets back to your comment about culture earlier when we started talking, because you want to be clear about your values and the culture and that behavior matters and how we treat people matter. And don't roll your eyes at the customer if they ask us what you think is a stupid question, or they said they read something on the internet about these tires and you hate when people do that, that we're here to serve. And so we need to form a good connection with them because they can go somewhere else or they're not treated like crap. So it goes back to values quite a bit. The reason why people often let that person hang around is they've created a paradox by hiring someone who later they need to fire. And that's, look, it's very difficult and it's to fire somebody. I have been in that situation when I was a leader in the publishing business, and I'll never forget how that felt to do it. But ultimately, the organization, you know, surgery doesn't feel good either, but ultimately it's in the service of getting better from something.
Have you ever found someone who's savable?
Yeah. If the person is motivated to change because they didn't realize the impact of their behavior, then there's some traction there. I do not suggest that companies try to coach someone using an external coach. I do think there's a way to visualize this to answer your question, and that is to be very clear about your values and then plot where everybody else in the organization is as their proximity to showing those values at work. So if our value, we don't have to say the customer is always right. But we want to say, we always want the customer to feel good when they leave. And so we ask the customer before they're leaving, how do you feel about what you got today? What was helpful about what we did? Oh, you explained this to me. Like, I didn't understand that about breaks before. Now I understand. Like, we can quickly assess that. But we can also see, and I do get your point about this being visual, because in the area of service, we deal with visual things. We deal with things that we can see. Somebody who we both know who's terrific, Greg Buckley, he'll do a video to something the person can't see under the car. He'll do a video of that so they can see exactly what he's talking about. He wants them to understand. Where would we graph the behavior, how close it is to the values that we're trying to show here? And it's, we want the customer to feel good. Then you could get a sense of where team members are, how close they are to that value, and how, or the ones who are far away. What do we do about that? No, values are something the person walks around with. So that is the hardest thing to change. And if the person only values themselves and they have to be right, and I'm not taking cars on road tests because I don't like doing it, and I'm going to walk out of here if you try to compel me to do it, when that person's pretty far away from the value of serving the client.
Boy, I've always known that if you have your values set, you know, even better if the team helped you create that, then it's not hard to discipline or manage off of the behaviors that are not shown.
No, and we want staff to know that behavior is part of the assessment. So it's not just how many things you do and how quickly you do them or how well you do them, but it's also the behavioral piece of it. And I think you can make that part of a person's understanding of how this company runs, how it operates. When you're clear about that from the beginning, and that all goes all the way back to the interview process, when you're clear about that, then everybody can be on the same page about it. And we can have that conversation. And to a question that you asked a while ago with regard to performance reviews, to me, a high feedback culture where we're always giving feedback, we're always exchanging information, we're always sharing what's going well, what we could do differently, then it just becomes part of how we operate that we give that feedback.
How do we find out if that person's savable or not?
In everyday operation, if you see something that didn't go the way you wanted it to, then you should address it as soon as you can so that you start to learn why it's happening. The way that they're keeping physical materials around them is not the way you want it to be. It's not neat enough, or things aren't getting put back, or people can't find things that they used last. So as soon as you can, you want to address that specific thing. And the Center for Creative Leadership, folks can look this up. It's called the Situation Behavior Impact Model. It's a great way of giving feedback because you're mentioning the situation. The situation is after you finished with that car, that's the situation. Behavior is you didn't put these tools back where other people can find them. Then the impact. The impact is people had to waste time looking around for them. And then you leave some space there for the person to react. We don't want to so much set the expectation as we want to learn why what happened. The person might say, hey, I got a call from my wife that our kid was sick and I had to take that and I just forgot where I had put things. I apologize. We want some data about why that thing is happening that's having an impact on other people. If you're seeing a pattern, then I think you can have a different kind of conversation. But still, I'd say to them, what do you feel is going well? And what do you feel you could improve? And listen to the feedback that they give, because we want that information So that's diagnosing the problem with the car, right? I mean, we want to find out what their sense is of what's going well and what isn't going well to see, are we even on the same page? If you're not on the same page, I think you can address that. It seems like we have different views around how to treat other people at the shop. Here's what we value. Where are you on that? Because they might say, hey, I have the same value. I've just been super worried lately because our kid is sick or my wife's having problems at work or she was just laid off or whatever it is. We want to learn what might be causing the gap. And to the degree that we can are comfortable saying, what do you feel would improve this? Let them talk. We don't say, what are you going to do to improve it? Because they might say, hey, it's not me. It's just that if I could come in 20 minutes later, I'd avoid this whole other problem with the handoff of the kid to school, whatever it is. But we want to find out do they view the problem the same way that we do? You can't solve a problem that you don't see the same way. If we see it the same way, what are they willing to do to improve it? Or what do they think would improve it? And see if we're on the same page about that. Because it could be that there's things that we're not aware of that are causing the behavior, and they weren't aware of the impact it was having. But we want to assess the degree to which they see it, then the degree to which they wish to change it. That's the light bulb has to want to change. And then what do they propose doing to change it? And is there anything else other people could do to help with that?
It was a call to action, Dr. Dave, to really, I think, help summarize this. You know, the situational left side, right side is, you know, he sees it one way, owner sees it another. There's a gap in the middle. I love that. And I think another really big takeaway was address it as soon as it happens. Because if you're 6-9 months into toxicity, there is no saving that. And because of that, you've ruined, you could probably look back and say, I lost Charlie, who was one of my best guys, because I didn't do nothing about Joe.
Joe shouldn't feel like something was going on for 6 months that no one told him about, because that's not fair either. And sometimes we're hesitant to bring something up. But that's where I think that situation behavior impact model is so brilliant, because you're only bringing up one thing at a time. You're not saying, hey, I've noticed a pattern for 6 months of you talking badly to the driver who brings the parts and you from this supplier. You can't do that. And I've been like, by that point, you're too worked up as the boss, the manager, the owner. And now you're just blasting them. And they might say, hey, I didn't know they didn't like the way that I was talking to them. I thought they liked that. They always seem to laugh when I call them that nickname or whatever it is. And so that's where I think it's important to address it right away, because you don't want it to be like a court case. I've noticed for 6 months that you've been doing X, Y, or Z. The guy's going to go, why didn't you tell me that 6 months ago? I would have stopped.
I think this is a great episode for our listenership to start out the new year and make a hell of a resolution to fix any toxicity you may have from a team member. Thank you so much, Dr. Dave Wyman, psychologist, Wyman Consulting, for your contribution to our wonderful automotive aftermarket and for sharing your wisdom, my friend. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.